welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty, live in the Morton studio. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about potassium, one of my favorite topics on the farm. But if you'd like to call in and discuss anything going on your farm, we'd be happy to take your phone call or if you're getting questions for us. Our phone number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or you can send me a note on Twitter, AgPhDMedia, or Brian Hefty. So my brother Darren's out traveling again today. You know, he, at this time of the year, looks at a lot of breeder plots, a lot of research things. And it's going to be kind of nice for both of us when we get back in the studio, back on the farm. Your harvest is going to be starting fairly soon. And, you know, it's one of the things, as I ran our grain dryers for many years on the farm, that was my number one responsibility each fall. I think mainly because I could be the guy who had to check things overnight, and that's why nobody else wanted to do it. But whatever. Anyway, I could just tell you, when I'm looking at grain quality, this potassium thing is a big part of it. And quite often, where we think about potassium, here are some of the main comments that I'll get from farmers. Well, number one, I have a whole bunch in the soil already. Okay, we'll talk about that. Two, oh, it's mainly just standability. Doesn't have a lot to do with grain quality or yield. No, it really does. So we'll talk about that a little bit today too. And then the third thing is, just in general, how do I fertilize with potassium? Should I use liquid or dry? Should I broadcast? Should I band? Can I do foliar stuff? Does it all have to be in the ground? What's the timing of it? Can I do it early? Can I do it late? Well, let me start with that first. When we start talking about potassium, in terms of timing and how you apply it and what you apply, it absolutely can vary depending on your crop, your area, your rainfall, your soil type, a lot of different factors. So let me just step back for a second, though, and when we just look at potassium in the very beginning, the first thing that we almost always want you to do when you start talking about, hey, I want to raise a great crop, and you know what? My yield goals are higher. Let me just share with you, on our own farm, my goal in the next 5 years, I'd like to get to 300 bushel average corn across the farm, and it's all dry land, by the way, in South Dakota, where we only get about 20 inches of rain total in the whole year. Well, actually, that includes the snow. So it's not a lot of rainfall. And 100 bushel beans. 100 bushel soybeans. I really think that we could get to those averages 5 years from now. It's going to take some work. I'm not telling you, oh, this is a home run. We're for sure going to be able to do this, but I really think we can. Well, if you just look at fertilizer removal, we have the free Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. You can download that for your smartphone or your tablet. Anyway, you just pull that up, and then you can select which crop you have. So right before the show, I did that because I don't even remember the numbers off the top of my head for 300 bushel corn and 100 bushel beans, because quite frankly, we're not there yet. We're getting there, but we're not there yet. So I looked up 300 bushel corn. You know what the number is for potassium? How many total pounds of nutrients you need? Pounds of potassium. 405. 405 pounds. Now, granted, there's a fair amount that stays in the field if you leave all your residue there. Your roots and your stalks and your leaves and all that stuff stays out in the field, and all you remove is the grain. But even so, you've got to have, if you want 300 bushel corn, you have to have 405 pounds, not just in the soil, but available. 100 bushel beans, 220 pounds. So immediately when guys see that, they say, well, beans, it takes like half the amount it does for corn, so it's not a big deal. But here's the thing we don't have in the fertilizer removal app is, what's the peak in terms of uptake per day? Well, the peak for 100 bushel beans will be higher than it will for 300 bushel corn. Because you think about it, with soybeans, when do they take up a lot of their nutrients? When do they really, so to speak, make hay? Well, we always used to say August rains make beans. Okay, late July, August, that's the timing. So you've got a huge amount of potassium that is going into that plant in a short period of time, whereas corn, it goes in over a much longer period of time. So what I'm getting at is, even though 100 bushel beans, you say, well, 220 pounds, that's half of what a corn crop needs. Yes, it is, but at a peak, you're going to have an awful lot available. So here's, just take this a step further, okay? What did I say earlier? We farm dry land. We don't have irrigation. And we went 7 weeks this summer and had 1.2 inches of total rain. total. Okay, so we didn't have any big rains. The biggest rain we had was, I think, 7/10. Well, you know, if you're going to get any nutrient into a plant, you've got to have moisture. So if you don't have a lot of moisture, what can you do? Well, you can have more fertility deeper. You can also have a higher concentration of that nutrient. So we talk about available fertility. It's you got to have total pounds, but you got to have available fertility. And here's one of the biggest things that I wanted to leave you with today on that. When we start talking about available nutrients, okay, available, you think about potassium, because all kinds of people say, oh, there's plenty of potassium in the soil. You know what? There is a lot of potassium in a lot of soils in the Midwest. But unfortunately, a lot of that potassium is in feldspars. You know what feldspars are? They're rocks. And how quickly do rocks break down and release fertility for your crop? Not real fast. And this is why we've seen chronic potassium deficiencies around the country. The other issue that I see with potassium is you've got to look at it in ratio to everything else. Get a base saturation test run on your farm. Seriously, it's incredibly important, because here's the issue we had on our farm. We had a lot of total pounds in the soil, but we had so many pounds of calcium, so many pounds of magnesium, that the potassium wasn't getting into the plant. We had to change the ratio. We needed to get that potassium level in the range of 4% to 8% on the base saturation K test. And quite frankly, I don't know. To get to 100 bushel soybeans, I almost think we got to be in that 7 to 8% base saturation K range. We're going to be doing some more experimentation with that going forward. But I know that if we're not at least 4% base saturation K, we have more lodging issues. We have worse grain quality. We have lower yields. So we've bumped potassium, and we've bumped available potassium significantly on our farm in the last 10 years. It's made an enormous difference. Our yields have gone up substantially. Our sands have gotten better. Our grain quality's gotten a lot better. Our test weights have gotten better, all in part due to better potassium levels. So we'll continue talking about potassium as we go throughout the day. Again, if you'd like to call in, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned.
Don't let resistant weeds cause problems in your corn. Partner up with a tank mix of Impact Herbicide and Roundup WeatherMax or PowerMax Herbicide. Now that's an all-star team for overall control of resistant weeds, including water hemp, kochia, Palmer amaranth, and mare's tail. And because Impact Herbicide is the only post-emergence partner in the Roundup Ready Plus Corn Program, that's a team that earns you an incentive of up to $3.50 per acre. Get the resistant weed control program that pays. Ask your AmVac sales rep about Impact Herbicide. Always read and follow label directions.
What's the quickest way to ruin a nice spring day? Seeing glyphosate-resistant weeds like Velvet Leaf and Morning Glory get past your defenses and show up in your fields. It's more than a nuisance, and it will cause yield loss if you don't take care of it soon. So how do you cover the gap between glyphosate and resistant weeds like Velvet Leaf and Morning Glory? With the fast-acting post-emergence broadleaf control of Resource Herbicide. Resource is the ideal partner for glyphosate because it adds speed to your post-herbicide application. Resource quickly takes down problem weeds that glyphosate misses, so you can start fighting back immediately. No matter what weed threat you're facing, the best solution is a diversified management program to cover the gap and stop resistant weeds. Valent USA Corporation has several fast-acting, broad-spectrum post-emergence control solutions, including Resource, Cobra Herbicide, and Select Max Herbicide with Inside Technology. Talk with your retailer today to find out which one is right for your field, and visit valent.com/coverthegap for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
One thing growers need to succeed is freedom to choose what they put in their fields. That's why FMC Freedom Pass agronomic rewards make it easy and economical to pair your favorite seed brand with products proven to protect crops throughout the season. Choosing Authority brand herbicides and other proven FMC products pays more than ever before. Calculate your potential incentive at fmcagus.com/fmcfreedompass today. Always read and follow label directions. Authority brand herbicides are not registered for sale or use in California.
Welcome back. This is Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here live in the Morton studio. If you'd like to call in to our show today, it's 844-44-AG-PHD. Well, first on the show, we've got Scott Harms with us. He is with Archer Financial Services and part of the Grain PhD program. Scott, how are you doing today?
Very good, Brian. How are you?
Doing excellent. I am very excited for harvest to get started. We're getting some rain here, but I'm hoping the end of the week we'll start taking some soybean yields off. I was just kind of curious before we get into anything else, what have you been hearing for yields around the country, especially with corn and soybeans, but really for that matter, any crop, things above what we were expecting, below, what's it kind of look like so far?
Well, we are starting to get pretty good progress south of I-74, lower half of the Corn Belt. It's going to be a very rapid week. We've had some nice help from some warmer, drier weather. It's helped to get the conditions more favorable for harvest. I think right now, it's in a real general, generally speaking, the sentiment seems to be slightly better than expected. That's always a difficult qualifier to add to any kind of commentary because we don't know what they were expecting. We've seen numbers on both sides of what they had in previous years. I think most of the numbers are coming in, it seems, below last year, but better than expected is the kind of terminology that's being used. And that's not out of line of what the USDA has been projecting. I think there was a belief in the marketplace after the August report and the September report that the USDA was going to be off base. And once we got started running trucks across the scales, that we were going to find that the crop wasn't there. And we still could, if we are harvesting the best of our crops now, and we'll get into some of the later planted stuff that may not yield as well. But as of right now, I would say that the USDA is in their August and September production reports have been proven more right than wrong by yield results.
All right. So just to change gears then, let's talk about grain marketing just a little bit. And rather than getting into so much market commentary, because we don't really know on a vast majority of the acres yet. It's not going to be very long, and we will know how yields are turning out, and then that's going to give us a better indication what direction the markets might start to go. But what I'm curious about is on the grain PhD side and on the educational side, you know, we've gotten so many questions over the years about what can I do for a general marketing plan and teach me more about just marketing in general. These are comments we get from a lot of farmers. So where do you kind of start with guys? So let's say that a guy wants to talk to anybody with grain PhD, and you go, and the guy goes, hey, I'm just looking for general help on my grain marketing program. Where do you start with that person a lot of times?
Well, I think gathering information is very important. A little bit of the background, when they need to market, you know, what are their time frames in which they need to have certain things marked, what kind of storage they have. So once you've done the information gathering, I think we believe it's important philosophically to have a plan in place to where you can identify action points. And we have a program in which we do that, but we can walk through, and we can walk through different scenarios, whether it be options or futures that people are more comfortable in using and how it fits their risk profile and the timing in which they want to price stuff. But I think in order to get from the knowledge part of it to the action part of it, in which it provides the proper risk management that you need to have in place, you need to have some action points. And we've always followed the marketing philosophy, and we try to push people in this direction of, don't try to gather all the information at once and narrow your pricing window down, or at least your price management window down. We like to look at prices in a 45 to 60 day window. Anything beyond that, you're really dealing with fundamental information that you cannot factor into an actionable scenario. So you get a 45 to 60 day window. Perhaps you monitor it. We monitor for our program for every 2 weeks. But as a producer, you wouldn't have to be that on top if you didn't want to. But you need to be able to identify in the upper half of that range where these action points would occur. So if you've done the research and you've gone to the Grain PhD website and you've gotten comfortable enough with the market education and information that's available, and then you may identify then that first target point. Maybe it's in this current market environment. Maybe it's 375. So at 375, you have a plan for which one of these products makes the most sense to you, your risk management profile, what you want to get in place, on what percentage you want to get in place, and then have that order resting at that price level. It may not seem like it's very feasible today. It may not seem like it's very feasible tomorrow. But we're in this pricing window where the market can be pushed around by things. I mean, there isn't enough fundamental information in the immediate So there are times where the market can get pushed around a little bit by outside factors, technical factors. So identifying an action point, do a little bit of research. We like to gather information from different analysts, and then you glean where you expect the market to be in the next 45 to 60 days. And then you get to those points, whether we like to do the inverted pyramid, where you're hedging 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%. You can follow that same philosophy just with products that you are more comfortable with and you've done the research on, you're ready to step in. So identifying action points, once you've done all the information gathering, done all the education that we think is relevant for that particular producer to get them up to speed, then we have to identify these action points, make sure they fit within the overall, his overall market philosophy. But then you've got to have, we've seen it many times where people talk about, producers will want to sit down and talk about a plan, and then it gets to their price level, and they don't have offers in there, or they pull the offers. You have to be comfortable pulling the trigger when it gets to your point, and you have to be able to identify those pricing targets.
All right, so a lot of farmers that I talk to, they at least identify a couple of pricing targets. They kind of start along your path that you're talking about, but a lot of guys will tell me, well, I'd rather just, at that point, I'll just sell it to the local elevator, and then I don't have to deal with the board, because I just think there's a lot of risk there, and I'm worried about hedging and all this kind of stuff, and margin covering and all this. So tell us a couple of advantages. If a guy was to use options or futures, why would you consider doing that to increase your profit a little bit, as opposed to just selling to your local elevator, for example?
Right. Well, first of all, there's nothing wrong with just staying in the cash market. We have to be clear that product is available for conservative risk management programs. And, you know, and I think the most important thing is to be comfortable with what you're doing, reduce your emotion in the marketplace in your hedging, not increase it. But once you are comfortable moving into an option strategy or a future strategy, what you're going to find is flexibility is probably paramount. You don't know, especially if you're marketing 2018 crop in, you know, this early in the marketing year, maybe you don't know exactly what kind of acreage you're going to have or what your cost of production is. And if there's some kind of development in South America over the winter and you hedged it, which was a very smart hedge in early December, perhaps there's a weather situation that occurs in South America and becomes quite devastating, the price model is going to change. So probably paramount in the futures and option side of it is the flexibility that the market allows you to be able to just, if we get to a price point and there's enough of a growing concern, you're not comfortable going home that weekend on a Friday night or Friday afternoon with that, the price exposure that you have in the futures market, you reduce that somehow by offsetting it with maybe a call option, or you just lift out of it. You know, but it's important as a producer to be comfortable with where you're at. There, you're never going to have 100% comfort. You know, we can't guarantee that in marketing, but you get to a level where you can sleep at night, where you're comfortable, and if you feel like that needs to be adjusted, you can do that in the futures market. It's a little more complicated if you're just doing cash pricing decisions.
Yeah, and the cash price too. I assume you're telling guys, hey, when you get the right basis level, that's the time to work on the cash, and then you can still cover yourself over on the other side using options or futures.
Yeah, flat price. I mean, basis is something to watch very closely. If your intention is you're going to buy it back at some point, you may have to make a basis. You may have to make a pricing decision when the basis level is not quite where you want it to be. This year, we're coming off of a very big crop in 2016.
Sure.
We're getting ready to move into a crop in 2017 that is certainly not going to be tight by any stretch. So basis level may be a problem as we move through the winter months until something develops out of South America, chew through that supply. So you may have to make some pricing decisions when you have a poor basis.
Yeah.
And that's perhaps a chance to step back in on the long side with an option.
Yep.
Position.
All right. Hey, Scott, great stuff as always. That's Scott Harms with the Grain PhD program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are frog eye leaf spot and white mold hurting your soybean yield? Andiamo 230 by Sipchem Rotam offers a reliable and cost-effective solution. With the active ingredient tetraconazole, Andiamo mixes easily in a low volume of water and is compatible with other fungicides. It's a flexible addition to your fungicide program for soybeans. Learn more at sipchemrotam.com. innovation, and value for the new normal. SipCamRotam.com.
What if you couldn't hear 70% of this commercial? You'd miss a saying that would understand talking about, which frustrating, to say the least. The same thing can happen to the nitrogen in the soil, where up to 70% of nitrogen loss occurs. Instinct and NSERF maximize your nitrogen application, so your corn will give you the max in return. Get the whole story at maxinmaxout.com.
Innovation is key to successful farming. Our innovative Thrive 3D application system saves you water, fuel, labor, and time. Get yours at no cost with FMC Freedom Pass. Simply commit to 3-year purchase minimums of Capture Thrive 3D insecticide and Anthemax herbicide to farm faster and with more freedom. Get more details at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass. Always read and follow label directions. Capture Thrive 3D insecticide is a restricted use pesticide. Anthemax herbicide and Capture Thrive 3D insecticide are not registered for sale or use in California.
On Ag PhD, we've been talking about agronomy for nearly 20 years now. The number one question besides agronomy we get each week is for help on grain marketing. That's why we've created Grain PhD. No, we're not able to tell you exactly when to hit the high in the market, but we will give you the education you need to feel just as knowledgeable about your grain decisions as you do your agronomy ones. Grain PhD is the best place to go for all your risk management and cash marketing needs. Just go to grainphd.com or call 844-GRAIN-01.
You don't settle. You're driven. You're committed. You're a farmer. And you are relentless. Mycogen Seeds is relentless too. We won't stop. We never settle. We don't back down. We work hard and we work smart to get to know you and your farm and make sure you get the right seed on the right acres. See for yourself at Mycogen.com or talk to your local Mycogen Seeds dealer and let us prove our relentless dedication to you.
How do corn growers get in the zone? With Corvus, the number one pre-emergence corn herbicide. Corvus is the only corn herbicide that delivers 3 levels of defense against broadleaf weeds and grasses, including resistant weeds. Burn down takes out early weeds, residual prevents new weeds, and reactivation with rain gets late weeds. Want to keep it weed-free all season? Welcome to the Corvus Zone. Corvus, the number one pre-emergence corn herbicide from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here in the Morton studio. Today on the show, we are talking about potassium. As always, we are happy to take your phone call, 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us, radio@agphd.com. We'll get to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag later in the show. So right now we are talking potassium, and I've got Bud Gillespie on with us. He has been with Midwest Labs in the past. Bud, how are you doing today?
I'm just fine, Brian. How are you?
Great. All right. So when I think about a lot of the country here on the western side of the Midwest, so Nebraska in particular and South Dakota, I think about, hey, in the past, people have said, oh, we have all kinds of potassium in our soil. Why are we seeing potassium deficiencies? How can that be when there's a lot of native potassium in the soil? And how do you answer that kind of question?
Well, I definitely agree with you, and all of the tests show that we do have potassium. And I think the biggest problem is, Brian, that there hasn't been a real good test for potassium availability.
Yep.
And that potassium is there, but a lot of it's tied up, just not available to the crop. And we have seen in years past a lot of times with 300, maybe even 400 parts per million of potassium on the soil report, and still get a response from the potassium that is applied. So it definitely is a nutrient that is there, but it's just not available. And I wish there was a better test for it.
Okay, so what do you suggest for guys then? A lot of our high-yield guys we work with, and even for us on our farm, we do a lot of tissue analysis to try to figure that out. What do you tell guys when there isn't a real great soil test that tells you availability? Do you look at base saturation there? Do you look at tissue tests? Do you do both?
Basically, I think tissue tests are what I would like to go with. The base saturation, definitely. You can look and see what your percentages are and so forth, which does give you an indication, but still doesn't give you really a good analysis of what is available. So,
right.
Look at the tissue test. Of course, you can see some of your potassium deficiencies just by looking at the leaf. But to verify that, then go with the tissue test and make the correction. There are several products that are available that are good potassium release materials, and of course, out here we have the center pivots to put that through, and so it can be applied fairly rapidly. And not only is a good nutrient, but if you've had a hailstorm or sometimes insect damage, potassium seems to be a healing type agent. And so I think that's good also, both as a nutrient and as a healing agent.
Yeah, okay. So you start talking about products, and that was one of my questions for you too. Do you see a lot of difference between the liquid and the dry? Because one of my concerns gets to be, if I'm in a low moisture environment and I don't have irrigation and I throw dry potassium out there, how long is that stuff going to take to break down and actually become available compared to the liquid that would be available right away?
I really prefer the liquid. And I think that you put the dry out and... Of course, both of them can be tied up to a certain extent, but I think your chances of the dry being tied up are greater than the liquid. And just getting it broke down so it is available to the crop, that dry granule.
Yeah,
I would prefer the liquid over the dry.
Yeah, you know what we went to probably 10 years ago, and I'm still pretty happy with it. We kind of use dry as a build program and liquid more as a feeding program, because where this caught me was probably, I don't know, 12 years ago, 14 years ago, something like that, we had just started doing some strip-till stuff. So we put out some dry potash down 8 or 10 inches deep, and we went and dug a root pit the following summer, and it was, I think, June probably, might even been early July. But anyway, I still found plenty of the potash we'd put out the fall before, because we just didn't have enough rain, and right away I go, oh, okay, I get it now. So everything we put out last fall really didn't do us a whole lot of good this year. But boy, the good news is in a year or two, that'll do us some good. Well, that's not real great if you rent ground, and you don't know if you're going to have that ground in the future. So that's one of the big things I've told guys over the years. Yeah, you know, you can do some of these dry things, but you better be thinking a lot more long term than anything else. And the liquid can really help you and get stuff to you much quicker, especially in a low moisture environment. So at least I've told the guys in the dry situations, at least do some liquid. So at least we know you have something available for this year.
That's kind of how I feel about it. You know, back in the old days, and I'm talking when we had probably mostly dry product available.
Yep.
And, you know, the old Sulpamag and some of those were excellent, excellent products. But I think that the liquid would surpass in availability, maybe not price-wise, but in availability today. And if it's even if it's cheaper, if it's not available right away and you need it, get something on it that's going to be available.
Okay,
then you get the crop response.
All right, here's one other thing. I just wanted to get your thoughts on this. If you talk to almost any seed corn company out there now, they'll tell you plant more seeds, right? I mean, that's been their biggest thing. You got to increase population. But if the guy doesn't have a good potassium level to begin with, and now he's going to bump his plant population, isn't he going to have a lot more lodging problems?
I would think, because that potassium is definitely there for stalk strength. And if you don't get a good, strong stalk, you can run into a lot of problems. But I'm not an advocate of getting too high a population. I know that some people really push the populations,
yep.
But in a lot of cases, I think people put too many seeds in the ground, and they actually are defeating the purpose. Some people think if you go to, you know, over 40,000, that's a lot of seed, and I think a lot of times you just don't have the sunlight available to feed that crop, spread that plant out a little more, and a lot of these new varieties will be able to produce even if you don't have quite the population of a heavier population.
Yeah,
so, I'm not an advocate of getting too heavy of a seed.
Yeah, for a lot of the high yield guys, and what we've seen too on our highest yielding stuff, it's about 10 times your population. In other words, if I figure 30 for my population, 30,000, multiply times 10, that's 300 bushel corn. And that's kind of what a lot of the high yield guys will use as a figure. You know, they want to be in the 9 to 10 range. So, yeah, I don't see a lot of guys averaging 300 bushel corn, yet I see a whole lot of guys averaging 34, 36, even any more, 38,000 population. I do like the new planters where you can vary that. We have one of those on our farm, so we'll cut the population way back on dry land sand as opposed to our best ground. So I think that helps a lot.
Sure.
But I'm with you. I think sometimes we get the cart in front of the horse and we start bumping population. Well, you really got to look at, do we have enough to feed that population first?
That's right. That's very correct. I think you've got a good theory there, Brian.
All right. Any last things that were kind of on your mind today, Bud, here as we go into fall and you're getting a lot of yield reports out and all that kind of thing now? Guys are starting to ask a lot more about, well, what do I do for fertility programs going into next year? Anything else that kind of stands out to you with potassium?
Not really. I think... Of course, I've worked in the soil testing end of it for years, so I am an advocate of getting out there and getting your soil test pulled. And really doesn't hurt to pull them in the fall. There is a little variation as far as the potassium levels that you might see between fall and spring, but it's not enough to make any difference. So get those soil tests pulled while you have a chance in the fall and be ready in the spring. And
do you usually see it higher or lower in the spring as opposed to fall?
A lot of times it'll be a little higher in the spring than in the fall, but that's not always true. But it isn't a big variation, but there is a chance of a small increase.
Sure, yeah, and it depends on when you pull those samples too. That's one of the things I tell guys all the time. Well, what's fall to you and what's fall to me may be two different things. When I farm in cold environments and we get done with harvest when the snow starts flying, well, not a whole lot's probably going to change in my soil as opposed to when I go out there in the spring and we plant sometimes when there's still frost in the ground. So, you know, when you get into these cold environments, yeah, you don't have the variation that you do in the warmer environments. Hey, Bud, we got to run, but thanks a lot for the time today. Really appreciate it.
You bet, Brian. Good to visit with you again.
You bet. Thank you. All right, well, we are going to continue talking about potassium here on the show. If you want to call in, it's 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
With generations of experience and a legacy of excellence in construction, Morton Buildings delivers fully customizable buildings for a variety of purposes.
And it wasn't just, this is what we build and this is what we have. They took our ideas and made our building.
It's a superior building. Of course, the warranty is fantastic, and it's all as a result of Morton's designs.
Don't miss your chance to build Morton. Contact your local Morton Buildings Construction Center or check us out anytime online at mortonbuildings.com.
In today's market, growers deserve products that bring true, measurable value to their farm. My name is Wade Barnes, and I am the co-founder and CEO of Farmer's Edge. My passion has been to build a company that makes great products that creates value for farmers. When value is clear, decisions become easy. At Farmer's Edge, we believe the only way to understand value is to experience it yourself. I want to give every farmer the opportunity to experience the value of their data. Try our integrated data solution with no commitments till May 1st, 2018. Farmer's Edge will install cam plugs in every piece of equipment and weather stations on every farm. We'll give you access to our farm management platform, Farm Command. Experience the value of having accurate, field-centric data at your fingertips. I know we can make a difference on your farm. Your data is your asset. Own it and use it. Visit us at smartfarmers.com and sign up today. That's smartfarmers.com.
You know our names. Ultrablazer, Surflan, Topson, Manzate, Asail. But do you know us? We are UPI, a worldwide leader in crop protection. And we are quietly leading the way. We are developing and improving products that meet your ever-changing needs. Today, we offer more than 90 herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, and fumigants that provide the widest range of protection in agricultural, aquatics, turf, ornamental, and pest control markets. And we're building for the future, too, In fact, we've built 29 manufacturing facilities worldwide to ensure you always have the products you need. At UPI, we spend our time thinking about the things you think about, protecting your livelihood and reaping a bountiful crop. So let's get to know each other. Visit us at upi-usa.com today.
Let's take a look at our picks for the championship season. We've got 10-34-0.
No. I don't want to talk about them. I want to talk about this Agro Liquid team. Take a look at this lineup. They got it all. The talent, their players can meet any challenge on any field. The coaching staff, the best I've seen.
So that's your pick? No discussions?
Nope. Agro Liquid is the team. They're going all the way to the championship.
Welcome back. This is Ag PhD Radio live in the Morton studio. We've been talking about potassium all day, and we will continue that discussion right now. We've got Galen Beer on with us. He is with Agro Liquid. Galen, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Brian?
Doing great. All right, so I got a couple of questions for you on this potassium deal. First of all, I just wanted to talk about the foliar side, because when we were just talking to Bud Gillespie there, we were talking about plant tissue analysis. And I know a lot of these high-yield guys do tissue analysis. We certainly do on our farm. But the question becomes, okay, in heavy soil, you're not going to get a lot of potassium to move down through the soil in dry land farming without a whole lot of moisture. So can I do foliar feeding? Can I get potassium into the plant through a foliar tactic like spraying? Is that going to work?
Well, we have shown some good results doing that, especially on soybeans. We're fairly consistent with that. It has been a little more erratic on corn. So if you absolutely know your tissue test has come back and you're low on potassium and you need to pick it up, then definitely I think that's a way you can go. Obviously, the preference would be to be able to get enough into the plant prior to that point, but we all realize that occasionally that doesn't happen.
Well, back in early September, Darren and I did a bunch of little field days with Randy Dowdy, and he's the current world record holder on soybean yield. Had 171 bushel beans last year. The whole field that he pulled that out of, I think it was like a 95-acre field, 140 bushel average. So, you know, it's slightly better than we were at last year. But anyway, one of the things he talks about a lot is looking at tissue tests. And, hey, if I'm low, I just have to get nutrients into that plant somehow. And so when I talk about the somehow, for him, he's got an advantage when he has irrigation and light soil. A lot of people think, oh, light soil's bad. Well, light soil is actually great when you want to change that soil quickly. Well, what do I do if I'm in heavy ground and I didn't get enough potassium on early? Isn't my only option when I don't have a lot of rainfall? I mean, during the course of like June and July this year, we had 1 or 2 inches of rain. That's it. How am I going to get potassium into the plant unless I foliar feed it? Is there another option?
There's really not. I mean, you're kind of backed into a corner at that point. I will tell you there's one thing that seems to be effective if you would know that you would get rain, and that's putting a cation like potassium with an anion of sulfur or nitrogen. So if you were still able to catch that early enough and you were going out there with Y drops or something, I certainly would use that as a method as well. But again, on soybeans, you're not going to be doing that. We've been effective on foliar feeding soybeans. Corn is just a little bit trickier and harder to get the same response out of.
Okay, I'm glad you brought up the Y drops, because that was literally the next question I was going to ask you. Nitrogen and sulfur, a lot of guys are having success with the Y drop thing, in part because they're putting the fertilizer basically right in the row or very, very near to the row, so that the placement's fairly good. Could I do that with soybeans? I mean, what would be wrong with that in soybeans and putting that there? And if I do that either in corn or soybeans, when I go along with nitrogen or sulfur, what are you seeing for potassium movement getting down into the soil?
Well, we don't have anything, you know, as you know, Dr. Zuhair Masri works with us, and that's something we haven't had him track yet and probably need to have him look at tracking, because right now we're kind of getting just that feedback from that seam to give me a response.
Yep.
And that's not scientific. But
yep.
I think the reason is, and you've probably done this, Brian, is if you go out there and you're putting sulfur or nitrogen, it does change that soil right there a little bit.
Yep.
And I think what it does is shift some of the things that would normally work against you from that potassium moving into the plant, and it gives you a window of time there if you can get some moisture to go ahead and get it down in the soil up through the root system into the plant.
Okay, here's my next question for you, because obviously you guys handle liquid fertilizer and you talk to farmers about liquid fertilizer, but I get a lot of guys that say, well, it's potassium. I can't put very much of that with the seed, or even if I go 2x2, I can't load it up too much. Talk to us just a little bit about how comfortable you feel putting potassium, or like one of your products, like SureK, for example, potassium next to a corn plant and next to a soybean plant.
We're very comfortable putting it next to the plant. Corn, you know, in furrow is a lot less risky than it is on a crop like soybeans. But if you're in a 2x2, you can put, you know, pretty good rates of liquid forms of potassium out there. And our SureK, and even if you're in a 2x2, our Calibrate, which has both potassium and sulfur, are excellent options. Now, I do want to be clear that if you're in an area where you're horribly anemic on potassium, we still recommend that you do, you know, shoot for that 3% base saturation level and then use our potassium to feed that plant and not
sure.
use it with the hope that you're going to influence that number somewhere down the road.
Yeah, we were talking about that just a little bit earlier in the show, too. That's one of the things I had said, because we've had chronically low potassium in some of our ground. We kind of built it up with potash, but then my fear is always that we're not going to get enough rainfall. We may have tie up, whatever, because that's on a broadcast basis. Yeah, we can throw lots of pounds out and it all looks cheap, but if you don't get moisture and you don't have uptake, well, yeah, in the long term, somebody's going to benefit from that. But especially on rented ground, I don't have a lot of time for that. I got to have some uptake now. And so whether it's been rented ground or owned ground, we've been doing kind of a combination deal, dry to build, liquid more to feed the plant in the short term. But we're doing some stuff. We've done some stuff 2x2. We've done a fair amount of in-furrow. The in-furrow still kind of scares me getting real high rates. I mean, I don't mind doing some. But, you know, okay, so let's say you have heavy soil, drier environment, like I'm talking, 20 CEC, not a lot of rainfall. How comfortable are you putting 10 gallons of SureK in furrow, or would you rather stick to 2 or 5, or what do you usually talk about in our part of the world?
In corn, we say you can go up to 10, but on soybeans we would say 3. And you know, we know we have guys that do more than that, but there's so many variables that
right.
can go the wrong direction on you. And you know, I think just like you say, you're nervous sometimes when you get into a sensitive crop like soybeans that you could put too much and have injury on. I think now with a lot of different of the hybrids coming out and the genes, there's just a lot that we don't know, no way to research all those. So we kind of play it conservative on the soybeans and say no more than 3.
And when you go 2x2, then what's kind of your recommendation? And again, we're talking heavy soil. So, yeah, light soil, I understand that's going to be different. But let's say I have heavy soil. What do you talk about with 2x2?
I have had guys go high rates of nitrogen and potassium combined up to 30 gallons per acre. As long as you're in heavy soil and you're not going to get bleed through to the seed, that's the key. Now, if you're going to try to do potassium, you probably get a call from your banker before you reach those levels.
Yep.
But certainly I would be comfortable with that.
Okay, so talk to us for just a minute about salt. And what does salt do to a seed? Because you guys talk so much about low salt stuff. But what's the harm in having salt near your seed?
Well, the harm is it can hurt germination. And when we talk about salt, we do like to say we're talking about it in the context of what is the injury potential, because all fertilizer does have salt, and a lot of guys send that off to a lab and say, look, the EC came back and said you have salt in there. Well, we do, as long as we're selling you nutrients. But what we do with our flavanol polymer technology has helped buffer our nutrients so that it doesn't cause injury to the seed in the way that some other nutrients were. We're not completely exempt, but we are a safer form of fertilizer that can be put next to that seed.
So if a guy's real concerned about it, number one, you switch to low salt stuff. Two, you could cut the rate. Three, you could go to 2x2. I mean, are those kind of the normal steps that you talk to guys about if they're concerned about it?
It's the exact steps. And you made an excellent point earlier, Brian, in talking about how you look at your soil, that you can have a lot of pounds out there and you may not get it. And we look at it the same way. Look, those figures that you guys talk about on your show about base saturations, those have as much to do with water infiltration and getting the maximum out of your soil as feeding the crop. We always still say, you know, a good liquid form of potassium will help feed potassium into the crop.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Well, again, we've just had Galen Beer on with AgriLiquid. Galen, thanks a lot for the time. Great stuff as always.
Appreciate you having me on. Have a good day, Brian.
Yep, thanks. All right, well, we're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag. That's coming up right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Increase your yield potential by putting the power of nature to work. Quick Roots Microbial Seed Inoculant helps improve the availability and uptake of key nutrients like N, P, and K, which are critical for a healthy crop. Quick Roots technology is available for a variety of crops in an easy-to-apply formulation. Simply mix it into your dry planter box and your seeds will be covered. Learn more at MonsantoBioAg.com/QuickRoots.
And now we have Jenny in the field talking with Farmer Dave.
Dave, this corn has some noticeable differences. Tell us what's going on here.
Well, I know AgriLiquid had helped me out a lot last year, but I've been using my old fertilizer program for a long time. So I decided to do a comparison, AgriLiquid versus a conventional program. So far, the differences are pretty obvious.
Looks clear to me.
Absolutely. AgriLiquid is going to take the championship here.
Introducing Irrigation Mission Control, Rain Cloud from Rinke.
Looking good.
From almost anywhere with any smart device, access and manage irrigation data, pivot functions, check soil moisture and more, all from a customized dashboard that fits in your pocket.
For better decisions and smarter farming.
Visit myraincloud.com. That's myreincloud.com.
The Guardian Air Twin Spray Nozzle from Hypro produces a twin spray pattern with air-inducted droplets for superior coverage, even in dense canopies. Be effective and efficient with your spray application this season with the Guardian Air Twin. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
One herbicide can seem like enough, but it can't do it all. Luckily, one herbicide portfolio can. Get the upper hand with BASF Advanced Weed Control. The most sites of action. Proven performance. Go to advancedweedcontrol.basf.us today to see what BASF can do for you.
Consult with your state regulatory agency regarding status of registration in your state. Always read and follow label directions.
You don't settle. You're driven. You're committed. You're a farmer. And you are relentless. Mycogen Seeds is relentless too. We won't stop. We never settle. We don't back down. We work hard and we work smart to get to know you and your farm and make sure you get the right seed on the right acres. See for yourself at Mycogen.com or talk to your local Mycogen Seeds dealer and let us prove our relentless dedication to you.
Hey everybody, come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
All right, our first question for the day, and this really isn't, well, this was a really big question. I'm only going to give you a little of the information. So there's a young agronomist that just sent me an email the other day, and he said, okay, Brian, can you give me a recommendation on here's a guy's soil tests? Take a look at this. What do you think? He's going to plant beans next year. So I said, All right. I know you've been to a number of our soils clinics. I want you to pull out the soils clinic book and just run right through the steps, just like we have it, 1 through 12. Because what we quite often find is, you know, as a farmer or as a young agronomist, you're smart. You can do this stuff yourself. It's just a lot of people, it feels to me like, need a little bit of hand-holding because they get worried that, well, maybe I'm not doing it right or whatever. But anyway, I just challenged this guy. I said, you know what? I'm not going to give you a recommendation. What I want you to do is you give me your recommendation first, and then we'll go from there. But it's real easy for a lot of people to get focused on the NP and K side. So he sent me back some NP and K stuff. And so I just literally during our commercial break here, I sent him something back and said, okay, well, that's NP and K. I want you to tell me about sulfur. Tell me about micronutrients. Tell me about where does the guy need tile, or does he? How about lime? How about elemental sulfur? How about those other things? Take a look at that. So let me just give you a real quick example. So I just pulled up the soil test that he sent me, and I'm just looking at the first five little tests that he sent me. So on one of the fields or spots, I'm not sure what it is, the pH was 6.5. Okay, that's perfect. But then he's got another spot there that's 7.4. Well, when you start looking at 7.4 versus 6.5, that's a big difference in terms of nutrient availability and that type of thing. So one of the things that I look at that I see big differences on are iron and manganese. So then I go to his soil test, and I'm looking here and looking and looking for manganese, and I don't even see a manganese test. Well, I kind of like to know manganese. That's incredibly important. Manganese helps crops in a number of different ways. One of the things it is key for is emergence. Okay, well, where this guy is in northern South Dakota, and I realize the name of South Dakota says south, but I'll tell you what, South Dakota is a long ways north. And if you're in the northern part of South Dakota, your number one issue most years is your ground in the beginning of the year is cold and wet. So you're planting, I don't care if it's corn, soybeans, whatever, you're planting into cold, wet soils. Wouldn't you like to have a little bit of emergence advantage? Sure you would. Well, you'll have that if you have better manganese levels in the soil. When you have higher pH, then a lot of times manganese isn't quite as available. So that's the first thing I'm looking at. The second thing is, I don't even have a test here. So I need manganese. So I realize manganese isn't the first thing that I was looking at this test. I looked at a whole bunch of other stuff. But I just wanted to highlight one thing for you as our listener that I look at and I go, hey, why don't we have a manganese test on here? And also, how come you gave me back this NPK stuff and we're not looking at addressing that 7.4 pH? He also sent me some deeper tests. In other words, 6 to 24 inch. He pulled a 0 to 6. Then he also pulled a 6 to 24 inch. Guess what the 6 to 24 inch test was where the 0 to 6 was 7.4. The 6 to 24 inch test was 8. It was 8. Okay, when I see that, and also guess what else is high in that test? I see nitrogen levels are higher. I see salt levels are higher. I see sulfur levels are higher. All the things that could be and should be leachable, they're high. Okay, I don't have a boron test. That's the other thing I'd really like to see. Boron's incredibly important in corn and soybeans. So a lot of times in those high pH spots, what we find is it's a drainage issue. So one of the things that I sent back to this agronomist is I said, okay, let's just say that the farmer tells you, well, I'm kind of short on money. I can't do your whole program. I know I should, but I can't. Where should I spend my first dollar? Guess where I'm going to tell the guy to spend his first dollar? I don't care about any of your fertility program. You know what I care about? Let's get the drainage issue fixed. Because at the salt level that he's at, that's crazy detrimental to yield. At the pH level he's at, there are nutrients in the ground he's got right now that aren't available because his pH is too high. Let's fix the drainage. Maybe we can put some elemental sulfur out there if we need to. But guess what? He's already got pretty high levels of sulfur. So the sulfur thing is going to take care of itself. In other words, he's going to lower his pH if he gets that tile in the ground. So that's where I'd spend the first dollar. Okay, our next question. And yeah, I apologize. I spent half of my mailbag time on one question, but I just thought that was good. And at this time of year, a lot of people are looking at that exact thing. So I wanted to highlight that. All right, next one is from Northwest Manitoba from Tanis, who says, hi, I work as an area agronomist in Northwest Manitoba, and we use your crop removal app quite often in making good fertility choices and understanding how many nutrients it takes to grow a bushel of grain. Thanks, Tanis. Appreciate that. He says, we are seeing 80-plus bushel wheat and 50-plus bushel canola up here this year. Corn and soybean harvest hasn't started yet. I think our biggest opportunity in helping farmers in this area is making sure they fertilize appropriately. I agree with that 100%. So anyway, his question here is wondering if we would do some webinars on soil basics, soil fertility, water holding capacity, nutrient holding capacity, soil testing, all that kind of stuff. So Tanis, I will just tell you, no, we don't typically do those webinars because we have all kinds of stuff posted through Ag PhD. So if you watch our Ag PhD show this fall, we're going to be talking about all that stuff. It's just I only have about 5 to 8 minutes per show that I get to talk about that. But we'd be happy to answer any specific questions you have along the way. And also, I'd really encourage you and anybody else, come to an Ag PhD soils clinic. We'll teach you start to finish how to do a lot of these things. And we do have some up in North Dakota soils clinics, for example. So if you want to come down across the border into the States, we would love to help you. Next question is from Ron out in Montana, who says, in recent years here in Montana, we've been growing a lot of pulse crops, yellow peas and lentils. And we've created a huge problem with Canadian thistle. Local dealers are recommending 40 ounces of RT3 plus 12 ounces of Unison after the first light frost in the fall. Trouble is that the frost is usually at 10 degrees and then it stays there. I've used this in the past and it doesn't work. Well, I could have told you that, Ron. You're wasting your money if you're spraying Roundup after it freezes. Wasting your money. Complete waste of time. So you've got to be out there at least a couple of weeks before the first hard frost. If you're able to do that, then usually glyphosate is outstanding on Canadian thistle. That rate is not bad. Now, I'm not going to say that I wouldn't want to bump that rate a little bit. You're talking 40 ounces of RT3. 44 ounces of RT3, by the way, would be equivalent to 2 quarts on a 4-pound basis. And we have found in very nice weather conditions, that works quite well. So if I've got 80 degrees with a low of 65, then 40, 44 ounces of RT3 will probably work fine on your Canadian thistle to permanently kill it. Here's the other step. Make sure that that ground is not worked. Now, I realize in Montana, a lot of it is not worked. But just for anybody else listening, do not till the soil first, because what happens is you cut that root system up. We don't want it cut up. We want to be able to kill the entire thing. In lentils, there's not much you can do post. In peas, you can use Basagran. That's what we used to use. But yeah, you're way ahead if you can get it in the spring and or fall with a high rate of Roundup. Okay, let's see if I've got another one here. This one is from Don in Illinois. Oh, by the way, too, I have a whole stack full of email questions, and I was trying to get to ones that I thought were timely here as quick as I could. Anyway, Don from Illinois says, Brian, when I first read your theory about dicamba drift, I was skeptical. But after thinking about my experience spraying dicamba, my thoughts changed. So basically, he talks about how he used dicamba in not necessarily the same way that they are telling you to use it. Now, I'm assuming he sprayed it in corn and did it on label. We'll go with that, okay? But anyway, his point is here, his results were excellent when he used small droplets with no drift retardant, and all he did is just paid attention to which direction the wind was blowing, and he had no drift complaints. Here's where I'm going with this. On the whole dicamba thing, my contention for the last 3 months has been we screwed up dicamba. We've never had this many problems with dicamba ever before, and I think a lot of it has to do with the big droplets and the fact that we've got drift retardant. And why do I say that? Because when you have great big droplets with drift retardant, it doesn't get absorbed into the plant as quickly. Well, the longer it's sitting on the leaf, the more time it has to vaporize and volatilize. So that's a problem. So we're doing a test right now in cover crops we just sprayed last week. And I mean, there's soybeans in that mix. So we'll be able to learn a lot more from that, where we went out with Old Clarity at a pint, no drift retardant, small spray droplets, and we'll tell you more how that turned out here in the next couple weeks. Well, before we go, I just want to say thanks to our production staff, thanks to anybody who called or wrote in with questions today, and thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.